Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Founders Fund, it is one of the most prestigious VC firms. It's behind some of the most recognizable names in tech today. Early investors in Facebook, Airbnb, Spotify, Lyft. Joining me now for an exclusive interview is partner Trey Stevens, an early Palantir employee also, who also co-founded defense firm Anduril. That startup, most recently valued at $8.5 billion, just landed a contract with the U.S. Army yesterday on top of a Navy contract earlier this year. Trey, hello. Thank you for joining me.
Hi, how are you?
Let's start with defense. You know, we've seen this trend of government agencies increasingly embracing startups like Anduril versus the broader, often more mature companies, even mature tech companies that they've typically worked with. Why is that shift occurring?
I think there's a lot of reasons, you know, that we went through this 30-year period after the Cold War where the, you know, risks to the country were kind of unclear, where we, you know, went through total superiority and then counterinsurgency, counterterrorism. And we're kind of re-entering this era of great power conflict and trying to figure out who are the types of people that we need to work on the core problems. And a lot of those people have been working in internet companies, optimizing ads and figuring out ways to share 140 characters with their friends more effectively. And we need to draw some of those people back into these areas of national significance.
I remember at the beginning of sort of when government agencies started to look at working more closely with tech companies, Google was there. But there was a big blowback inside the company, its employees, and its sort of its vibe was to not work with government agencies. Did it miss an opportunity there, do you think?
Well, I mean, one of the benefits of a democratic society is that you don't have to work on things you don't want to work on. This is obviously very different than the civil military fusion that we see in some of our adversary countries. I have, you know, no issue with Google employees saying they didn't want to work in defense. But at the same time, you know, in 2016, 2017, it was plausible to believe that globalization worked. And that closer interaction with countries like China, Russia, Iran, were going to draw them into the global community. And I think in 2024, it's much harder to make that argument, obviously.
Trey, at the top, I mentioned the now public companies that Founders Fund has invested in early, and we're in this new era of Gen AI. Steve Cohen was on air yesterday saying it's not yet a bubble. We don't even know who the winners and losers are. You look at early stage startups all day. Where are we heading? Do you think that we're going to see incumbents continue to dominate this shift, or is there room for the many, many upstarts to get in and dominate some of the space?
As with any category, there are going to be winners and there will be losers. And I think what you see in the tech space in particular is this kind of movement towards category winners in kind of an almost monopoly-like way. And so at Founders Fund, our strategy has always been quality over quantity. We were investors in DeepMind before it was acquired by Google. We have a big stake in OpenAI, in Scale, in Cognition, which is the new AI coding platform. Not all AI companies, not all AI founders are created equal. We're looking for density of talent on founding teams. And not all of these companies are going to work out. There's going to be a lot of money that's lost, but no different than in any other category. Like, you know, if you're a space tech investor and you didn't invest in SpaceX, you probably lost money. I think AI will look kind of similar.
And for our audience in particular, that mostly looks at a lot of, you know, public companies that are accessible to public investors, you just named a bunch of public names. So I want to ask you about the IPO market and when they might have a chance. And I want to play a soundbite for you. Greenlight Capital's David Einhorn sat down with our team and at Scott Wapner at the Sohn Conference. And he said that a lack of buyers is what's behind the slow IPO market. We're going to play it for you, and then I want to get your take.
The S&P is making highs, right? We're in a favorable economic environment, and yet where's the IPO market? Why aren't companies able to come public? And the reason is companies used to do these things called roadshows, and they would come to these managers, these long-only managers, and they'd say, hi, I'm the mid-cap manager of the such-and-such fund. Would you like to buy my new stock? And if that person isn't there or they don't have any new money, there's no one to buy that stock. And so you have a closed IPO market, even in the face of really, really favorable market conditions.
Trey, that was kind of a perspective I hadn't heard that often, because I usually sit in San Francisco and talk to founders, many of whom kind of believe there's a bit of a stigma around going public, that you can't build for the longer term as well as you can if you're private. So what do you think of his comments and whether the IPO market is truly going to open up or not?
Look, the reality is there aren't that many good growth companies out there. You could probably name on one hand companies, public or private, that are doing better than 30% annual growth. I spend a lot of time talking to growth investors, to bankers, in my role as chairman at Anduril, and there are a lot of buyers. There are people that are interested in buying attractive growth stocks that have kind of a generational category shifting technology or approach to an industry. So while I think there's probably some truth to, there's not as much new money flowing in, at the same time, for the right stock, the macroeconomic condition matters much, much less, I would say.
Right. And Anduril, for example, is that a company that you think is a good candidate?
Not immediately.
We're
having conversations. I think there's a window that will make sense for us, but certainly not in the next year.
Well, last question for you. I know that you guys are investors in OpenAI, and it still has this kind of unusual structure, right, of being a nonprofit. Is this a company, and some of the other Gen AI companies, are they going to be able to actually be public companies if their mission is to serve humanity and not financial stakeholders?
I don't think there's any inherent tension between being a publicly traded company and doing things that are important for humanity. Certainly the structure of OpenAI is complicated, but I fully believe that the management team there is not only focused on things that are good for humanity, but they also do care about shareholders. And I think that's why so many people have lined up looking to get into the business. I don't think that would be the case if they thought there wasn't a financial opportunity on the other side.
Yeah. And the board changeup reflects that. Got some experience from public company CEOs there. Trey, thanks very much for being with us. Always appreciated.
You bet. Thank you.
Two new headlines around Google's parent company Alphabet Crossing this morning. It's now reportedly considering charging for premium additions to its AI-powered search engine. Also reportedly weighing an offer for the online marketing company HubSpot. Deirdre Boza digs into those for today's Tech Check. A lot going on here, Dee.
A lot going on, Courtney, but I think you can view them as net bearish if you want to see Google really jump into the Gen AI race with both feet, as many investors, onlookers, they do want to see. Let me tackle that report first of a paid Gen AI features, which one could argue signals some desperation and perhaps a lack of commitment to disrupt its cash cow, which is search. The company's dominance, remember, it was built on free products: Gmail, Drive, Calendar, Maps, Search. Users don't pay, but advertisers do, and they pay a lot of money, making Google one of the largest and most profitable companies in America. Gen AI behind some kind of paywall, that would really be the first time Google put any of its core products behind a paywall. And it goes against that ethos that has been so successful. Just last week, bulls were encouraged that Google was expanding its search generative experience, SGE. It's an overcomplicated, very googly way of just saying Gen AI to its main product, search. They thought, okay, Google's using its distribution as a competitive edge. Good. Plus, search advertising apparently still works in that format. But a paid search product, that looks more like a niche, less widely adopted service that, again, underscores this innovator's dilemma. Search ads are too good a business to disrupt, so Google risks getting disrupted itself. For its part, Google in a statement says, quote, "We're not working on or considering an ad-free search experience. As we've done many times before, we will continue to build new premium capabilities and services to enhance our subscription offerings across Google. We don't have anything to announce right now." That is a very vague response, guys. That doesn't actually address the report. It is interesting to note that Google and Microsoft, they're being held to very different standards here. When Microsoft monetizes a Gen AI product like Copilot, the markets have reacted positively. The key difference here, though, is that Microsoft is focused on the enterprise, companies with software budgets and KPIs, Google's customer. It is still very much the consumer, and the consumer is less likely to pay. There's also this investment piece of this. Google pioneered Gen AI well before its competitors, but right now, those rivals could be viewed as more committed, more ambitious in AI. Microsoft has poured some $13 billion into OpenAI. It's reportedly weighing a $100 billion AI project. So it is all in. Can't see that any other way. HubSpot, getting to that other headline. This is a company that Google is reportedly weighing an offer for. It's an online marketing software company. Sure, it is leveraging AI, but it is not an AI native business like an OpenAI or an Anthropic or a number of others that Google rivals are investing in. Finally, guys, Google CEO Sundar Pichai spoke yesterday at Stanford. He pretty much summed up this entire dilemma.
One of the most counterintuitive things I've seen is the more successful things are, the more risk-averse people become. So counterintuitive. You know, it's you would often find smaller companies almost make decisions which bet the company, right? And like, you know, but the bigger you are, I think it's true for a large university, it's true for a large company, because you have a lot more to lose, or you perceive you have a lot more to lose.
So bottom line, guys, he is very aware of this innovator's dilemma, but executing against that, that is the challenge. And it feels like over the last year, they just keep getting tripped up on that challenge.
Yeah, I found it interesting, sort of to your point about the difference between Microsoft charging and Google charging, one's enterprise, one consumer. And the Wells Fargo desk sort of says, you know, look, I think given some of the recent AI product launches we've seen from Google, most notably Bard and Gemini fiascos, there's a lot of doubt amongst investors that Google will stick this landing.
You know, investors, part of the story in tech overall over the last few years has been efficiency, right? And I remember the stock was going up and investors were celebrating when at the start of the year Google started by doing all these rounds of layoffs. But when it comes to Gen AI, investors want to see that these companies are all in. So you can get lean and efficient on one hand, but you can't skimp on Gen AI because it's moving so quickly and the winners and losers are being decided right now. So Microsoft splashing out billions and billions of dollars on Gen AI startup darlings, on potential products. The market is going to forgive that. Google may be splashing out on a HubSpot to maybe beef up its core and its cloud business might be seen as less generous, right? It's not really getting it ahead in this Gen AI race compared to, let's say, Microsoft or even an Amazon, which is pouring money into Anthropic, another darling. There's also the whole regulation of it, right? Is there going to be a breakup fee? Are regulators actually going to let this acquisition go through if it does get to that point? Microsoft is even doing that in a very different way. They're doing deals. They're not doing all-out acquisitions.
Yeah, pretty interesting debate about whether or not charging is a sign of weak margins or just a part of the general move to subscriptions. We'll see which voice is louder in the coming days. Dee, thanks.
And
Deirdre Vosa.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.